Leadership is taking people on a journey where there's a vision, guidance, and purpose.
Good leaders lead with the heart as well as the head.
Leadership means doing the right thing for the right reason, no matter how difficult it might be.
You're listening to Leadership Unwrapped, a podcast where you will hear from people who are living leadership every day.
In this podcast, you'll hear what is a very open and somewhat vulnerable conversation between us and Thomas McCormack. Thomas has a degree in humanities and is an experienced events manager. He subsequently moved into coaching, which he has since found extremely fulfilling. Our paths first crossed when we met one of Thomas's friends at the university who was telling us all about Thomas and his work, and he knew that we'd have so much to talk about. We subsequently asked Thomas if he'd join us for one session, and since then we've continued to have these meaningful conversations every time we've met.
This is a different type of podcast. Thomas, like ourselves, is deeply committed to presence and to authentic conversation. So after much thinking about this and a few trial runs, we just decided to hit record. And what follows here for you is a conversation that we all found really meaningful, a conversation that continued long after we stopped recording. In keeping with that, we decided not to over-edit this podcast either in the spirit of this conversation. We really believe that you will get something from this conversation, because every time we sit with Thomas and chat, we really do. So we hope you enjoy the podcast.
So listeners, I hope this conversation is going to come true in a way that you understand where we're coming from. We've spoken for about 2 or 3 hours before we've even started the recording. we had to actually stop and say we're going to have to start doing the recording instead, because we were getting so into the conversation. So we just said we start and see where the conversation goes.
So I am really delighted that we're in person talking to each other, because we've chatted a few times. And every time I go away thinking about the conversation that we've had, but also it's helping me personally have a lens around some of the stuff that I'm experiencing, because we've had a chat that sort of touched off maybe something that happens in the next couple of weeks. So the fact that we got to meet in person and have this chat today, I'm really happy about.
Thanks for having me. It's been the conversations we've had. I think it's, there's almost like a history to today's conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is lovely. And then meeting in person, there's just something that's always even maybe more beautiful since COVID. Or certainly I've noticed it, is that when you're meeting people in person, there's just like, I love that word beauty these days, but there's something more alive about meeting people in person, And there's just something else happening when you're with people. Like in live connection, where you can reach out your hand and they're there and you can converse. There's just more going, you're in the same context, the same world is around us. And there's just something, I don't know, there's just something beautiful about that. Online is great, as you said, earlier on, serves its purpose. But I guess for me, certainly, I think in the world we're in so many different contexts, there's a sense of fragmentation.
Yeah.
So being in, there's something else that happens when you're with people in conversation, I think.
Yeah. So this relationship and this conversation has stemmed from, we were working with your friend Shane, who introduced us.
Yeah.
And that's how you came and talked to the students about your experiences with coaching. And that was online. And then we met a few times online since. We recorded a podcast online, but I think we were all so taken with the conversations and what we were speaking about. And it resonated with us all so much that we had to meet in person and do it in person instead. And that's what brought us here today. And I'm delighted that we are doing it in person now. Definitely.
I think there's, for me, there's a piece around, like I have really liked being online, because I've been able to go to lots more personal and professional development trainings because they're all online, which I never would have done that before. So I love that, and the meetings are online. But it's still a bit performative for me, because it's a meeting as opposed to just being really present. I try to do it online. I hope I manage to do it, but there's something about just being with the person that you can feel the warmth in the room. And the energy levels change in a room when you're talking about different things. So I know I talk about this a lot, but that between people as they're talking to each other piece. And so that's why being just being physically present to each other is really part of the dynamic for me, for having that warmth and connection. So we can't lose sight of it, I think, in terms of when we need to have the types of conversations we need to have, that some of them, that you make a decision to say, do you know what, no, I need to be present with the person physically to figure this one out.
Mm.
That's kind of where I am with that.
Yeah. Well, it's a kind of, I guess the thing kind of coming into my head, it was just a really good example of kind of what we're speaking about, is that obviously the online stuff is really, really valuable. But then I was with a group a couple of weeks ago in Sligo, and it was so interesting. I was in the room. There's one person in the room when I walked in. I had a brief chat with her, and then people are slowly coming in. And they work from all different parts of the country. So they're all coming in, and you could see them going into their little different groups, and you could see, like, you could feel the energy of the group, like, slowly rising, and the conversation. You could hear, like, the aliveness of the room was slowly building.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of, it was giving me a sense of, I guess, what the day might call for, or what was needed, or where we are at. You know, we can sometimes go in and have a plan in your head.
Yeah.
But the beauty of a plan is for me, is like having a plan and then be like, okay, well, there's something else here.
Mm-hmm.
That's more important than the plan.
Yeah.
And that, I'm sure it happens in different ways, but in Zoom, it's just missing. And you have a break, and it's like, oh, and they go for the break.
Yeah.
And then they go for the break, and there's all the chatting, and they're coming back. I was like, how long did that take? 5 minutes. What's different now?
Mm.
And they're like, and a big thing that people might say is, can't take a break, I've too much to do. I was like, but what's different in 5 minutes?
Yeah.
That all happened in the aliveness of, like, being with people. And how the session doesn't start when it starts. Mm-hmm. It starts before it starts. It's like today's conversation started.
Yeah.
People will feel the conversations we've had today without knowing that what was said.
Yeah.
It's something that's carrying through or something. Anyway.
There's also an energy. It's a human energy. It's unquantifiable. You can't measure it. And it's serendipitous. I hope I'm using the right word there. But so energy sparks off energy and creates something else. And online, there's less of that, I think. So that, for me, is important. But the other thing that's freaking me out a little bit is that when I'm giving some talks now, they're hybrid. So some people are in the room, but I've no idea of who's not in the room. There's just a big screen at the back of the hall, and there's, like, you know, you're told this many people are coming in remotely, which is fabulous, but I can't read them. I have no idea how what I'm saying is landing, and that's freaking me out a little bit. I didn't realise that until I've done a couple of them now in the last 2 weeks, and I've realised how much I rely on the non-verbals that I'm, and the energy in the room as I'm talking about something. Mm-hmm. That actually gives me the direction that I'm going to go with the next sentence. I didn't realise just how pivotal that was to the way that I want to do my work. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning how to go into that space a bit, but it is a little bit, I'm on edge a little bit with it, that I can't see what I'm saying, how it's landing. Now, I'm getting messages and emails and everything afterwards, so it's, you know, and they're great, and I'm enjoying that piece and getting a chance to connect, which wouldn't have happened as much if everybody was in the room that have said it to you as they left or whatever. But so that's nice. It kind of keeps, there's a temporal thing to this hybrid, so it keeps the conversation going, because the person who was coming in remotely says, I didn't get a chance to say that, but I just wanted to send you an email and say. So it's elongating in one way and creating a connection. And in another way, it's feeling a bit disconnected. There's a really strange yin and yang with that one.
Mm, interesting.
I really like that we're starting this conversation with this topic, because I know I said it to you, Thomas, it wasn't the first time we met, because it was something that resonated with me from when we spoke before. But I know I told you that... while I'm obviously very, very aware of active listening, it'd be funny if any of the students I've taught are listening to this, they'd be saying, how ironic. It's something that I really try to do, but, like, you know, everyone, I'm human, like, and, you know, I do find it's one of those things that I have to keep bringing myself back to, reminding myself to really be present. And, like, when I'm saying this, I don't mean that I'm not listening to what people are saying, but I just find, like, I can be all go, you know, like, I'd be hearing what someone's saying, but at the same time in my head, I'd be thinking of something else at the same time, if that makes sense. And it is something that I would regularly be like, right, I'm bringing myself back and trying to consciously do this now. But it was like almost naturally from the conversation that we had And from talking so much about the importance of it, it was a few weeks later I went to a conference and I met another PhD student, and we had no plans for the evening. She just said, do you want to go grab a bite to eat or whatever? So I went with her, and like, I just felt I was so engrossed into what she was saying, and I was really just hanging on every word that she was saying. And it, I reflected on it afterwards and I was like, you know, that I think that was an outcome from the just the conversation that we had had, and I had subconsciously started doing it more, whereas usually for me it's something that I have to remind myself of.
Yeah,
you know, so I'm that's a total anecdote, but I suppose I love that we started the conversation with this because it was something that really resonated with me from our previous conversations.
It's I remember your face when you're telling me about it, and I was like, wow, what must have that been like for the person you're talking to be heard with someone who is engrossed in listening and interested.
Yeah,
I was like, but it sounds like it was like a really nice experience for you.
Oh, it was definitely. And it's funny because it's one of those things that I don't know would I have necessarily noticed it as much if we hadn't had that. Like, I think actually, do you know what? I think I had this realization the first time I was telling you about it. I don't know, is it even necessarily that I don't usually do it, but it was the fact that afterwards I was very aware of the fact that that was the experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
It's like, or the way it's coming into my head now is like, you can be really good at something and not know it and put no value on it. But when your awareness is brought to it, all of a sudden there's a value in this. Because sometimes what comes naturally to us, it just comes naturally. So we tend to, I don't know, sometimes there can be a narrative in our heads. If you're not working hard for it, it doesn't matter as much, which isn't true.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So having an awareness of what it is we desire, what we like, or what we want, and being heard, and all these different things makes things different. Like, everyone's got an intricate, complex system of that where beauty is coming up again. But like, it's, you know, we're all gifted in different ways. But if we don't have an awareness of it, it can feel like I don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't bring something.
Yeah.
But everyone does. But without awareness, we can't know.
And there's another piece to it about being confident in it for me. So you may have the skill that you're not aware of that other people really value in you, you know, and you might not have a confidence in the impact that it has. So we sort of we discard it or we diminish it a bit. But actually, when you lean into it, to use Sheryl Sandberg's phrase of leaning into things, but when you lean into it, it just builds your confidence in your relationships with other people. That's the piece that I think that I'm trying to say. Do you know, I really believe that if we are actively listening to each other, we can cut through a lot of the bad workplace or relationship stuff that happens, because we're just taking ourselves a little less out of the equation and we're making space for listening. So for me, in my job, it's really busy and it's high demand, and people are expecting you to be decisive and, you know, to manage. People want that from you, but they don't want to be managed, but they want you to manage stuff, right? So your head is full all the time. But actually, when you decide to be actively present and listening, it's completely liberating, because you don't have to be managing and demanding or doing any of that stuff. You can just be, and you get really nourished from that. You kind of get back a bit of your... It makes you less tired and more energized, and alive. That aliveness phrase that you used. So for me, it's almost a survival mechanism too, for getting, re-nourishing that exhausted piece where you've been expected to be giving all the time. Your giving is different. It's just by listening, which is really giving to somebody, to listen to them in a good way. So I'm quite... it's helped me a lot in the last couple of years, I must say. Yeah.
Narratives can be so exhausting.
Mm.
Can't they? Like, when we don't make the space to be, or to be quiet. It's like what we're saying about listen. You can listen to someone, but if you're listening to someone and not trying to figure out what they're saying or what they should do, we come with kind of like an energy or presence that lets them know. Like, they know it, whether they know it or not. that kind of says, I've got the answer in here somewhere. Mm. And the more they talk, or however it is that they all of a sudden they start to relax. It's like, once again, it's like the, it's like when you're with someone, like the energy is flowing between you.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, what do they say about water levels or something? But you'll, you know, eventually your energy levels, they'll start to become in sync. Mm. So if you're being present and really with somebody, they're naturally going to, that they're going to feel that, which relaxes their thinking, and all of a sudden a solution shows up without having to figure it out.
Yeah.
So it's like that kind of less is more, a lot more challenge to do, because it kind of has to be a practice in some way. But, you know, we make things very hard for ourselves.
I agree.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm thinking of as you say that? Lots of my friends are in choirs. I'm not a big singer, but I love people who sing. And they say, you know, if you're in a choir and you're singing for a certain length of time, all the heartbeats are in concert with each other. They move into beating at the same time with each other by simply being present and doing that activity together. Because you have to be very present when you're singing. And you have to be present to the other because you're dependent on each other. So the heartbeat begins to go in sync with the other singers. And I love that idea. And then the stuff comes. Which I think it's amazing. I didn't know that until the door.
I never heard that.
Did you not?
No.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. There's something amazing in that human nature piece. That when you're in a choir and singing, that actually does happen. Tells us about the stuff in the human spirit that we don't know enough about as to how humans in connection with each other are interdependent with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Which are quite, yeah, it's an area for further study, but it's quite interesting.
Yeah, fascinating. I love that too, because it's singing all different voices.
Yeah.
With a similar purpose, same hymn sheet, you could say.
Yeah.
And something happens that they come together.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's something, and it always comes across when I speak to you, Thomas, but something that where you know, it's a way that, like, I find you get a feeling of if someone's really present and someone's really listening to what you're saying, is you don't feel an expectation to know the answer to what it is that you're talking about. You know what I mean? You know the way sometimes someone asks you a question and you feel that you should very much know what it is that you, how you want to respond to that immediately, and you're kind of like almost jumping the gun to get there. And like, I imagine that a lot of that comes into the coaching piece as well, of like, if someone's asked a question in coaching, it's not necessarily for them to in that minute to have the response to it. It's to get you thinking and reflecting on that. And I think it's something that you can feel in a conversation with someone. If you can say, even in the same breath, you answer one way and say, you know, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, or the more I'm thinking about it, and you're trying to build an understanding, and you're building that through the conversation rather than it being this kind of static exchange. Mm.
Yeah. But isn't that a bit counter to what we're expected to do?
Mm-hmm.
Now, everything is about having the answer, and like even with emails or in the way that we work now, you have to respond and you have to give the answer, or you have to move it on to the next thing. Or so it's harder and harder to just promote that more musing,
mm-hmm.
thinking space. So you almost have to go counterculture to say, I don't have to have the answer. The answer is in the next question, actually. I think, you know, I find that interesting.
It shows, though, or doesn't it show how much pressure we put on ourselves to be mm-hmm. somewhere we're not?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, I don't have the answer yet, but I think that I should have it. So, so I'm going to try and give an answer that maybe I don't even believe in.
Mm.
And you can feel it, because we've all felt it.
Yeah.
The pressure to be like, the pressure we put on ourselves, the pressure, whatever. But it's fair. I guess that's going back to the, I guess my way of seeing it is that each and every individual, like we're just made up so intimately as people, collectively, but as individuals, so everyone has a perspective that's valuable and they have a way of seeing things. that hearing it in a different way, you could be speaking about the same thing, but depending on who heard it, could say, oh, that was different. Like, mm-hmm. I just thought they were saying the same thing in a different way.
Yeah.
It's why we need everybody.
And it is completely amazing how we all hear different things in the one conversation. So we're all bringing something different to the conversation in the first place. Because we're taking something different out of it. And it's dependent on whatever's going on for you in that given moment in time. So that's also immeasurable. Like, you can't... That's the joy of the human brain, is that it will think in any direction if you allow it to. But it's messy. Like, it's very messy. If you have a group and you're working with a group, that you can either be paralyzed by the knowledge that what you're going to say is going to be taken up differently by so many different people, or you can see it as an opportunity to expand. And I think in the world at the moment, we're moving more and more towards confining and defining, into there is a way, there's a right way of doing, there's a right person to go to, there's a right answer. And I think that closes down possibility and creativity. So, yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah. Thinking that way, though, is a challenge, because, you know, we're all living in a world where, you know, everyone's trying to get X, Y, and Z and LMNOP and everything else done in the one day, you know what I mean? Like, and you're just kind of ticking things off and, you know, approaching things in a finite way with a goal in mind of, this is the answer that we're looking for, makes it easier, because you have a short-term answer, you have a short-term reward for doing that, and then you move on to the next thing. So I think what we're talking about and looking at the world in that way is a challenging thing, because you don't have those shortcuts or the short wins. And, you know, it can be difficult for people to look at things that way, because that's not how they're viewing it. They want the X, Y, and Z to be done in that day. So I think it's a huge challenge to think in that way.
It reminds me, when you're speaking of goals to people, like, I just seem to train coaches, and it's a part of the journey, but then even out in the world, because it's so, you know, coaches are so everywhere, or people seem to know that there's a lot of coaches but still not know what coaching is. And it's all about goals, isn't it? You know, getting here and getting there. And I'm like, it is and it isn't. It's like, goals seem like the end point, but it's actually the starting point. Because right now, going back to what you're saying about our experience in the moment, it's like, right now, someone can ask you, what's really important to you right now? Like, what goal would you like to set for, you know, 5 or 10 years? And right now, my answer is true of now, but the goal that I've set for 5 or 10 years is more telling of my desires now than what I might want in 5 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So on my journey to that goal, if I don't take into account what's changed in me and what's changed in my context and my environments, and don't bring that in to actually add things or take away things from the goal, then the goal is slowly becoming more irrelevant, and I'm slowly chopping off parts of my humanity, which means by the time we get there, of course I'm going to be empty.
Mm-hmm.
Because now there's a huge disconnect between the moment I came from and the moment I'm in, and what the goal, the intention of the goal, and what it is now. And that's why we need both sides. We need, this guy called Ian McGilchrist speaks about, he says, there's creativity and there's maths and throughout all our brain. It's not just one side, it's all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the left hemisphere loves what it already knows, and the right hemisphere looks for the mystery, what's unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And we need both, but we need the curiosity of what the future might be to lead the way, and then the other part of our brain to come along and do the little bits and pieces that can make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of, I guess, I forget what sparked this, but it's very much so, when we get too caught up in the things we need to do, we forget that who we're becoming along the way is going to inform where we're going to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's out of the picture, there's something else huge that's out of the picture that is hard to put words on. But I think we all know it, but might not have the words for it. I guess what I've come to see is that the more you really, you can, I guess your own life and what you think about things is very much so shaped from how you experience it. Like, we can know all the things, but our humanity piece comes from what we've experienced.
Yeah.
Which I found is really good, because I don't expect a lot of people to understand certain experiences I've had because they haven't had them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great, because it takes a lot of weight off our pressure and expectation of everyone. But then also at the same point, you can talk to people and realize that you might have had different experiences of, for example, like, I always think that everyone has a part of them that they'd love to share with others, that if they shared, everyone realized, geez, do you think that too?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much of that. So in some way, I think when we actually, if there was, there's parts of us that if we spoke about it a bit more or found a way that we could, we'd realize actually we have so much more in common than we think we do. Just the stories and the way they sound might look different.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes, mm-hmm. it makes perfect sense. In my own life, I lost my sister in tragic circumstances in 2018, and I'm still on only the beginning of the journey of grieving about that, and that's a whole other story. But at the funeral, a colleague travelled a really long distance. I didn't know them well at all. I knew them. I mean, this is a big institution to work in. There's over 1,000 staff. I knew them kind of out in another area, and they came, and I remember being so shocked that I said, I can't believe you're here. And she said, I have sisters. And when I imagined what it would be like, that if I lost one of them, I just had to get in the car and come down. I will never forget that moment. It has stayed with me forever. And that was about empathy, but it was about what I called feeling forward. I know this sounds crazy, this word, but I don't talk about it a lot. But I talk about feeling forward, not in a weird way, but in a I imagine that if that comes to my life in the future, that what I will feel will be so the type of support that I will want or need in that time, I'm going to give to someone now. And I'm going to take a risk by just walking up to a stranger and saying that that's the way I think.
Mm.
And that is the most beautiful part of the human spirit to me. And that's about being really present, because it showed her connection to herself and her ability to see the other person suffering and move that connection out into the other person's space. I was blown away by it.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from, but it came with that piece about saying that you don't have, sometimes you feel that you have to know the other person's experience to empathize. And in one way you do, in that kind of grieving space you do, but in another way you don't. If you don't, like, it's very hard when somebody comes and says to you, I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah.
That's really hard. And it hurts, actually, when you're grieving and somebody says that to you and they have their beautiful sisters and brothers with them. It does something to you. It does hurt. But you know that they don't, that what they're trying to do is a goodness. So you and then you remind yourself of that and then you move forward. Because you do want to say, I'm not sure you do, but that would hurt. But it's when somebody would say, I have this in my life, and if I lost it, I imagined that I would feel, so I had to be here. That's a whole other, more present, real way of acknowledging what's going on. So it's about kind of moving the orientation. It's in yourself, but moving out towards where the other person is at, shaping it so that it's where the other person is at, so that you can connect. It's kind of weird.
Mm.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, it does.
On another tangent.
No. And like, I like what both of you were saying there. Like, Thomas, you were saying that there's something liberating about knowing that not everyone has the same experiences, and that we don't all have to have these expectations of each other because of that. And then, Patricia, you're also talking about, instead of necessarily trying to relate someone's experience to what is happening for you, you're imagining about how that could feel if a similar situation happened. And I think it's huge, because so often we think about, oh, that's like that time that something happened to me, or, well, what happened to me was nearly worse, and they're more upset. Do you know, this is the way people think, like, isn't it? You know, and we're all guilty of it, you know.
Yeah.
But I think there's something huge in opening up the space as well to say that, to be empathetic, or to be empathetic, I suppose, with someone, you don't necessarily have to try and pretend that you know what they're feeling, because you never do. No one ever does.
Mm.
You know, you can try and be there for someone, but there's nothing wrong with saying, when someone's going through something, saying, oh God, that must be very tough. Like, and then starting a conversation of what do you need? Or, you know, what could I do to help? Or what can we do here?
Yeah.
But you don't have to pretend that you know.
Yeah. That's it, really. That is it, really. Mm.
I've heard... someone said something, I don't know where I read it or seen it or whatever, the difference between empathy and compassion. And empathy is kind of accessing your own feeling that resonates to resonate with someone. And compassion is knowing that you don't need to.
Mm.
It's like you were saying,
powerful, yeah.
Being there for them without having to get lost in yourself to find them.
Yeah.
I love that, because empathy was not the right word that I was using there. I was trying to come up with something else, but compassion. Yeah.
Someone said that, I was like, because I was starting off in coaching and stuff, was very much that sometimes you'd be like people would say to you, how do you leave your stuff? How do you leave people's stuff? And over time it becomes a practice. You know, it's compassion. It's like, well, my job isn't to get lost with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's compassion piece. It's like,
yeah, that's the piece that I find really hard to do in the work. Because, and I know we've talked about this a few times, but and I talked about it during the week, but people's feelings are very important to me, and I absorb their energy in a room. Like, when I'm in a room with somebody, I will take that energy in, and it's hard when you're a leader, because you have to say no to people and you have to disappoint people, and it's a really hard space to be in when you live in your world like that, you know. But being able to be present in that energy and support someone, but to be able to then keep yourself, to be able to not switch it off, because I can never switch it off. I'd always bring a worry from somebody. I can't switch it off. I try, but I can't. But to be able to manage it in a way that's healthy, that my job isn't to rescue and do everything for everybody. My job is to create the space where they actually rescue themselves, and that it's a safe space for them to do it in. That's a lifetime's piece of work, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's an art.
It is.
Complete art form.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of practice.
Somebody asked me during the week, I gave a talk on workplace bullying and incivility, and afterwards we were having a coffee, and they said, you know, do you find it really difficult to do that research? It's like, 100%.
Hmm.
And she said, do you bring it home? And I said, all the time. And one of the hardest times in doing that work, because people tell you the most painful stories, that you're just heartbroken listening to their stories and the impact for them, for their lives, for their wives or husbands, children, partners, parents, everything. It's just, it hurts on so many levels. And I was saying, one of the hardest moments for me as a researcher in that space was when I had done a survey in schools. It's years ago, and it was an anonymous survey, and children could answer the questions and then they could write a comment. And a child had written something, and I was sitting looking. I had put all the quants data, as sounded like a researcher now, I didn't put it all in the stats, and then I was moving back into the qualitative analysis, and I just couldn't do anything. It was an anonymous survey. I didn't know the school. I didn't, because I was adhering to my ethical procedures, which were that it needed to be. But there was a child that was feeling the way they were feeling, and I couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just heartbroken. I still feel emotional talking about it now as I'm saying it to you. I have never done an anonymous survey with children about bullying since. I haven't been able to do it, because I want to be able to, if somebody says a disclosure, that you can help them. So I've changed how I research as a result of it. But it is hard to do the kind of research in that space and then create a safe space for you to process. And that's why I have a coach. That's why I have done that in my own life, is to create that support and that space, that's just almost in a bubble where you can then work through what is the best way for me to manage listening to the stories that you're listening to. And sometimes I say, I got to get a happy job. I do research that's about happiness maybe sometimes, but it is a hard, it was the, when she asked me the question, I knew I was in the presence of an empath,
yeah,
which was really interesting. And I said, I really like that you asked the question because it tells me something wonderful about you. And she kind of was like, well, that's the question about me. But I was like, but it tells me that you see people. And I love that. And that was how we started the conversation. That went on for about 2 hours. But it was a really interesting piece around being present in the way that the person had asked the question. You know, things you don't think about unless you're in them.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Being seen. It's so important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like seeing people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the reason people talk to me about when, you know, when I put out a call for interviews around something like workplace incivility or workplace bullying, they just want someone to listen.
Mm.
And they give you so much time. You know, you say the interview would be about 40 minutes. It doesn't matter how long it takes. Or, you know, thank you. You know, you'd say thank you for your time. I'm going to just whatever. They will say whatever you need. I just want to tell my story because I don't want someone else to experience what I experienced. There's a real generosity in the people who talk to you. Mm. A selflessness, actually.
Yeah.
That is also living with deep hurt and sadness. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Doesn't it also just show that desire to be heard as well? Because it's interesting, even like when I've done interviews about school leadership that have been nowhere near as obviously traumatic as dealing with something like bullying or incivility, people will say afterwards, geez, it was fantastic. And you know, you're like, you're doing me a favor. And they'd say to you afterwards, that was fantastic. It was such a great opportunity to reflect and to think about where I am in my leadership and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And they'd go away from it feeling very grateful for the opportunity to do that. So I think there's something, as well as it obviously being very significant when you're having a conversation about something as moving or as emotional as bullying. But I think there's something about a commonality of people wanting to be heard.
There was a lady I was listening to last night, Caroline Mace. I used to say her name, Caroline Miss, which is Caroline Mace, an American name. And she was speaking about the archetype of the Holy Witness. And she was saying how, like, listening is a skill set, but it's listening, so that someone feels heard.
Yeah.
And she was saying how that three times, if someone can tell their story that they need to say three times, without anyone trying to fix, judge, you know, go into all that stuff, that in itself can be immensely healing.
Yeah.
In a way that you can let it fall away. Now, I'm sure it's not always like that. I'm sure it's not that simple. It's a skill that you build up. But for someone to be able to tell their story three times without someone telling them it's right or it's wrong,
mm-hmm.
that this is your experience, and to know that you're seen,
yeah,
is it's immensely. I was in a program last year, and what was fascinating was I went in, I'm a coach now, this listening stuff's going to be easy. What a block.
Famous last words
indeed. Yeah. Oh, it was so funny. And there was I remember we were paired up, and then the lady was paired up, and she goes, oh, I didn't, those eyes, I don't want to be. She was she just said eventually, she's like, look, I was just so afraid, and I didn't know why, because I knew you'd see me. And then, you know, I was there, oh yeah, I'm a great listener, whatever, this is fantastic, you know, thinking I'm exceptional or whatever. Which actually, that, you know, going in with that whole thing prevented my learning from beginning for a little while. Yeah. But then I was hurt. And it was like, it was kind of a, you know, it was a master's in applied spirituality. So it was from that perspective, it was like, you know, literally the wholeness of the human gets to be. And I started bawling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the tears came streaming, yeah, because it was genuinely heard. And I was like, what's going on?
Like, what is my need?
Yes, exactly. What is my need? So it's quite a humbling experience. No matter what, you know, you're like, it's just good to let go of what you think, you know, and then
yeah.
Yeah.
Really go in. Just the power of it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same. And I would, when I started talking to people about workplace bullying, not surveying them now with the surveys and getting the stats and writing the papers, but actually saying, I'm going to, most of what I do is what we call phenomenological research, where literally it's about how people make meaning of their own experience, right? A hermeneutic circle. It sounds a bit theory-based, but it's a good thing. And so I started with this idea that I had to have, because you're told as a researcher, you have to have your interview questions, and you learn that you do structured, which is like all the questions bang, 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 semi-structured, where you have your 10 or 12 questions set out and you have some probing questions, or unstructured. Tell me your story.
Mm.
I was, as an early researcher, thinking, what torture? Oh my God, you could never use that. No, that's what I do. I just say that I'm going to use an unstructured interview process. And the question, the ethics committee is a bit scratching their heads. The question is, tell me your story. That's it.
Wow.
And it is the most humbling and brilliant and amazing way of researching, because I have no idea where it's going to go. And I don't have the preset questions, and I just literally respond to what the person is saying with things like, can you tell me a bit more about that? Or can you explain that? Or I might mirror it to say, am I right that what I'm hearing? But that's it. I'm not going, you know, so did you experience this, and when did you experience, and what did it look like, and what was the effect, and what was the impact on your health, and what recommendations for the future? You know, the almost like typical structured piece. It's completely different, and they appreciate it.
Mm.
Because they are, it is about them. It's not about the research.
Mm.
It's about them. And I think I've learned so much from moving, and it took courage to do it. It absolutely took courage to say, I'm going to let go of the prop and I'm going to do this study by simply just asking people to tell me their story.
And honouring their voice in that way,
honouring their voice.
People can tell the difference, I imagine. I imagine you notice the difference when someone knows you're doing this for them as much as why you're doing it versus for the project. Or
I think so.
Yeah.
My sad piece is that I always, and this is the piece about we talked about earlier, about, you know, I can't fix it. That's the piece I find really hard, is that I say to people, I really want to hear your story, and I want to hear how you interpret your story, and how the meaning that you're going to make for the story is the piece that I need to take away, not what Patricia thinks of what you're saying, but what you think that Patricia needs to think about what you're saying. But I always feel a need to say, and I can't fix it.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I can help put the voice out there so that people have to hear.
It's really interesting that that's what you continued on to say, because where my mind was going was, I think that's the difficulty with this idea of like really listening and really being heard in everyday life, because we all want to help, you know, like everyone has good intentions. And like, you know, I anyway have a monster in me that when someone's talking to me about something difficult, you want to make it better and you want to give advice, or you want to suggest something, or you want to try and make them feel better in whatever way you can. And often that isn't what the person needs, but it's coming from a place, you have good intention in doing what you're doing, but that doesn't mean that it's right. And I think that's what's the difficult part about all of this, because when we talk about listening and being heard, it's not that like Patricia, you're talking to me and I'm turned around looking at Thomas instead and I'm saying, geez, would she ever stop talking? Like, that's not what it is 99% of the time. But you know, when people do, it's not what's happening, but it's your, even with the best of intentions, you can be putting words in someone's mouth, or like diminishing, I know that sounds like a strong word, but diminishing their truth, or not enabling them to figure out for themselves. And I suppose that all comes into coaching as well, of figuring out for themselves what to do in a situation and what's best to do, because they know the situation more than anyone else without you pushing your opinions onto it. And I just think that's very interesting.
It's very, like before I got into coaching, I would have spent probably most of my life without even realizing it, going around wondering, how can I fix? How can I support? But to the point where you'd lost yourself, where it's not helpful.
Yeah.
And you're not actually being helpful. Mm-hmm. You think you are. Yeah. Sometimes you are, I'm sure. But and I think the beauty in coaching, or just exactly what you're saying, is actually you can never have a full understanding of someone's experience. But being strong enough to know that being there for them, kind of trusting in some sense that like the solution that will work for them is closer to them than it is to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is so empowering, but it also takes a lot of pressure off yourself and going back to what we were saying earlier about the presence and how we show up affects what they are likely to see. The less pressure on me, then the less pressure on them. The less pressure on them, the more likely it is that the clouds kind of go away and like, oh sure, oh, I can actually just ask my uncle about that.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
But I think it's a part of human nature.
Oh yeah.
It's like it's this, you know, you only learn by being one way and then learn to go the other, and it's a constant oscillation. It's not a perfection thing. It's where you are in the journey and where you are in yourself, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Aren't human beings amazing, really?
Are fascinating.
I think we are. I do. I think when we stop up to think about it, I really think we are. And do you know, I was thinking about, I know I'm going slightly sideways on this one now, but I was thinking about brain injury. I know we mentioned this earlier.
Mm.
During the week, I was on a long drive and I was really thinking about this. And I was saying, I know, and I see how much growth people can have after sustaining a traumatic brain injury, requiring a brain injury. It's not, it feels like the end of the world. And when you watch people that you love trying to survive that, it's horrific, I have to say to you, but the courage that they bring to that is incredible, right? But then I was thinking about how much growth can come, how much healing can come that we think is lost at the beginning, because medics don't know enough about it. And I was driving along thinking, the brain is the last uncharted territory in there is. That's where we actually don't know enough about. I mean, we do have neuroscience and we have, you know, all of the theories we have about left brain and right brain and all the other pieces. But actual capacity to heal, restore, rewire, refunction, we don't know enough about that until we hear the stories of the people who are doing it. I think that was my thought for the week this week. But it's and so much of this too, we don't know enough about how we think and why. We have psychology, obviously, which tells us that, you know, human beings think and behave in particular ways, but that affective emotional piece, we're just at the beginning to understand what the potential is in the human mind. I think that's how I feel.
Yeah.
There might be a lot of people in particular neuro disciplines now that would disagree hugely on that, but they're not here today, so I'm fine.
See, we're the experts today.
That's how I feel about it. I just think that whole piece about how we are, Hannah Arendt uses this phrase of in concert with each other when she talks about human beings. I love that. That idea of a symphony, even, like how we all are playing different parts, and how much we have in that we know that this is what we do. I don't play an instrument, but I could be the violinist or the cellist. I'd be a cellist. So I know the music and I know what I need to do, but in order for the performance, we need a conductor.
Mm.
And people say you don't need a conductor, but most symphonies would say you do. And for very good reason, which is about bringing the performance together and making sure that it is the way that it needs to be. And it knows when you need to have pieces going quieter, pieces in crescendo, all those different pieces to the symphony that are important. And I'm butchering music for all musicians that are out there, but there is that piece about being as human beings in the world of work or just in the world, that we are in concert with each other. But some of us are doing solos, and some of us are doing group pieces, and I'm fascinated by all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just find it really You spend your whole life looking at it and just scratch the surface, I think.
Yeah. I think there's there's something about, which I've learned through my own experience, even if you can spend all the time in the world trying to figure yourself out or figure ourselves out as humanity, which is important. It obviously has its place and it's really, really important. But it's like, I get this sense, and maybe I'm wrong, but I just get the sense we're trying to figure ourselves out as if we're, there's something to fix.
Yeah, I get what you're, yeah.
As opposed to, the context is always changing. So the second you have something, it's changed. So what is it that we seem to be missing as a society or as a culture around the unknown and uncertainty? And it's I know it's a big thing for us all. But I guess when I think about the beauty of my life, the things that have are just from talking to people, it's the unexpected. It's the stuff, not always, but it's the stuff that you couldn't plan and the things you didn't know about people. But you have to come out of your ideas about what should be. Or when it comes to healing, for example, we're speaking about healing there and stuff. I love the whole energy healing in that space and love it. Like, love it. And I've found it, you know, different things with different people. I found it very, very beneficial. And then there's people who are amazing at it and they're afraid to speak too much about it.
And, you know, I've had, unfortunately, I've had COVID 3 times. We were talking about that. I don't hold the record. I meant something to 4 times. But I'm like, 3 times is the winner. Thanks very much. But
you're out of the competition now.
I'm out.
You don't want to win anymore.
But it has taken a toll on me. And I was in a meeting there February. And a colleague rang me afterwards and they said, I looked at you and you your eyes, your energy, everything just didn't look, I was worried about you. And I thought, what a really nice thing to do, because I don't know the person really well. And they recommended a naturopath. A naturopath? I hope I'm saying the right word. Anyway, well, probably not. But I just felt the generosity of it. And I said, have you had a good experience with this? And they said, absolutely. And I said, fantastic. I'm going doing that. And it was really interesting to me that we've come so far in alternative medicines. And we accept acupuncture now. And a few more pieces. But this was still a piece where people were saying, I think this will really help you, but there's still a piece in our world that doesn't accept this way of being. But I understand, I haven't met the person yet, but I'm hoping to get an appointment soon. But what I understand it to be is that it sees the whole person. And has traditional medicine can be part of that, but other medicines too, or other ways of operating. And I'm up for that. Like, I'm really excited about trying that. And she took a risk. I mean, I could have said, how very dare you? I'm not into any of that. Yeah. I was immediately like, number, please. I'm going.
Or I'm fine. I'm perfect. I don't need anything. Yeah.
It's obviously looking at me. She was like, we need to do something. We need an intervention. But there's a generosity in that, taking a risk to somebody to say. And it was a side of a person that I didn't know about that I'm blown away with and loving. Yeah. So when you're talking about the energy healing, I think there's a huge amount in that. And I think it does make a difference to people's lives. And I know a lot of people are not into it. But for those that are, that gain something from it, it's incredible. Because it does ground, is what I understand. And it does bring a person back into themselves and their energy and why they've been pulled off kilter a bit in order to be able to catch that.
Yeah.
I like it. It's back to that piece that I just feel as human beings when we're in with other humans, we're like sponges. We literally are sponge, what do you call them, vampires almost? Like, we literally take energy from each other, but we just don't recognize it. We don't talk about it. We don't recognize it, but we do. You're in a room of angry people, you come out angry. You know, you go in a room of calm people, you will calm down, you know. or not, if you go the opposite direction. But you know what I'm saying? Like, we do transfer energy to each other.
Hmm.
But we don't talk about that. But I call it the contagion effect in culture, workplace culture. So if there's a negativity, we absorb it and we move that negativity forward. Unless we are aware and we say, no, I'm going to come at this differently and I'm going to try and disrupt that energy.
Yeah.
So, that's a meandering there. Apologies for that. But
and it takes a centered energy to see that and then try and move the energy in a different direction as opposed to get caught up in it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Awareness, aliveness to the idea that we started with. That's where we started. Yeah. It takes that.
Mm. Yeah, so I love the, I guess it's coming into like different perspectives, different ways of looking at things, different experiences. You know, in the medicine part, there's traditional medicine, there's holistic medicine, or alternative, like they're all important, none are relevant. Got an email from Esther Perel. Have you ever heard of Esther Perel?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I hear her speak. There's something about the way she speaks.
Yeah.
It's quite like, you know, when someone just captures. Yeah. And she sent some email one day and it was around herself and other professionals from different ways of looking at things, but that all worked with people to support them in with relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that is fascinating. Mm. So it's not just a load of relationship coaches in a room seeing the way they do things. It's people that work in different ways. So you're getting a more whole picture view of the person.
Yeah.
And like, no one person can have all the answers. So I was like, oh, that's amazing. And like, that's more actually holistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then I'm a coach, so I'm going to spend my life just talking to coaches because it becomes an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No matter what way you look at it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just really fascinated by human energy and the way that we're directing our energy and the impact that it has on the people around us. And just opening up an awareness to that. Because I think it's bound up in the work that I do around how people are with each other at work.
Yeah.
And it's the space that is not academic, so people will not go into that. But there is something in it, you know.
Mm.
So, trying to forge a little bit into that.
Yeah.
And I think that piece about that different people bringing different lenses and different ways of working to the picture will give us a better picture. Put more of the pieces of the jigsaw in together.
Yeah. It's like we've all, the way we experience or see the world is a slice of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the more of us that come together, like the more likely that you're closer to truth being in the room. You never find it, but it's about working in that direction. Emergence, like the idea that, you know, the universe itself is moving in a direction. But there's not a place it gets to. It's like with where we are and what we've got and what we're desiring to do, and the limitations of whatever it is, what will move us one step further without trying to be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just challenging in of itself. But.
No, I think it is. And I've learned a lot since becoming, taking on a leadership role. I'm still learning about that. There's no doubt. But the one thing that I really hold on to is that I don't know what I don't know.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. That was a piece of advice I got from a coach. And it's not that I don't know something, it's that I don't know the context and that I don't know that I don't know that context. So I could make a decision if I'm definite, I could make a decision that I could cause more damage than in trying to fix something because I don't know the pieces that I don't know that brought us to this piece of the puzzle. So the leadership is in digging in to try and just assume that I don't know what I don't know. That's the base to start from there, so that I can get a better sense of a little bit more of the picture. And often that's about a lot of conversations with the person that you're working with, which can be frustrating to people who expect answer and decisiveness all the time. But answer and decisiveness might look like good leadership, but it's expedient leadership. So you gotta be okay to take a bit of crap about saying you're not very decisive. You are, but you're, I always use this phrase, people know I say it, but you've measured twice and cut once instead of cut and realized it's the wrong pattern. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you are moving in the right direction, or moving in a direction that is helpful, but you just don't have the answer. It's a bit of what you're saying.
Yeah,
sorry. Mm.
I'm wondering, I know this conversation has been very organic, and I don't think it's fitting for us to ask our three questions in the structured format that we usually do at the end. But I'm wondering, Thomas, is there something that either you would like our listeners to take away from this conversation to be left thinking about, or is there something that you feel you're left thinking about from this conversation?
I guess I'd love if someone's listening, I'd love them to think about, what did you notice about this conversation that you were drawn to? Very different way of doing a podcast. What did it move in you? What did we talk about that you're interested in? If you could sit down with someone now, literally after you're listening or as you're listening to this right now, and talk about it, what would you talk about? What question would you like to ask them? Is there anything from this conversation that has made you more aware of the power that you actually already have? But maybe because of the speed of the world and with so much going on, you didn't realize it. Perfectly normal. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with you. You're as human as the rest of us.
Yeah.
And then for me, I guess when I think about all the parts and pieces, I guess it's like us having a conversation that meandered and was quite organic. But I think at a whole level, I spoke about how can we be more honest about our wholeness in our humanity,
mm-hmm.
And how we all play a part of the symphony, and that nothing is irrelevant. As soon as we start, cutting off parts of ourselves to get somewhere, then we're leaving something behind that's important, even if it's not nice or even if it's sore.
Yeah.
And I guess for me, to be very honest, what I'm leaving with is, how can this conversation be continued in a meaningful way? Because I just, for whatever reason, when I was doing an assignment last year, and it was about marginalization, or the marginalized person, and the person lecturing was about homeless people, and she said something and I glued to the floor when she said it, and it was something not unseen and unheard, but fully visible. That's the experience of the homeless person. No one sees them, no one hears them, but they're right in front of us the whole time. And it just really got me thinking. I was like, why did that resonate so much? And it really brought me in a lot of places, whoa, okay. So for me, a part was always feeling like you're different, or that you experience the world in a different way. But the more I thought about it, I was like, I don't know, is there anybody who doesn't have a part of them?
Mm-hmm.
A part of them that they'd love for someone to see or hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's everyone. It's actually quite universal.
Yeah.
And I guess a fantasy I used to have, which I realized through supervision, was you're expecting someone someday to fully understand you. That's not going to happen. To come and feel seen and heard and understood enough within yourself is plenty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's...
Oh, yeah.
That is huge.
And you don't get there alone. I think I'd love to hear your...
Yeah, I don't think you get there alone either. And I think it takes huge courage to see yourself. It takes phenomenal courage to see yourself. And I've been very reflective recently, and I've been saying, I wish I knew earlier that it's completely okay to be just who you are and to raise difficult questions or to challenge ways of thinking, and to trust that your way is as valid as anyone else's. So, and that it's not, I think that we spend a lot of our lives as human beings wanting to fit in because it's safe. But the real actualization is in being okay not to fit in because it's better. And so what you're saying resonates a lot for me in that space. And I do think there is the unseen and unheard but visible is universal. If you were to tap into people's deep angst, that is where it would go. And maybe that's an existential angst that we have as human beings. It's part of the human spirit. But just being able to go there and just take it out and look at it and, find a way to reconcile with that a small bit is a really good piece of life work.
Love that, yeah.
Yeah. What sticks with me, I suppose, throughout our conversation today and our conversations in general is that while, of course, there's so much value in looking inward and reflecting and being aware of other people as much as we possibly can, I think there's something very powerful about acknowledging that we don't know everything and we don't have all the answers. And I think there's something very empowering about an acceptance of that, because it can result to just kind of more enjoyment and more positive feelings in where you're at that time, instead of the waiting for when I have the answer to that question of who I am or what do I want or, where do I see myself? What's most important to me? Because as you say, all of these things are constantly changing. And I think an acceptance of the fact that we won't get the answers to all of these big questions for ourselves and the big questions for life, there's a freedom in enjoying where you are.
Massive.
But I don't know how I'm going to edit this because I want to end with what you said.
Yeah, because it's quite powerful. The bit about that we don't get there alone is so important. So you have to search out people who are comfortable to get into the messy space of that, of these thoughts and conversations. But it's incredible. I love meeting you. I love talking to you because I gain so much from it. And that's not a platitude. I do. And my head, my thinking just goes, and then things happen and it resonates back. So I'm always back and forward with talking to you. But we started by connection and online and whatever. I just wish that the people who are listening to us could feel what it feels like to be in this room with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an incredible experience. It is an incredible experience. It's like that with you online, but it's even more so when to be present in your company. And that's a tremendous gift that you have that I wish other people could feel. So they'll get a little bit of hope from the conversation, but it's just been a real pleasure and something much bigger than that too.
Yeah. Well, as someone who used to jump over and run around and put things back on other people as opposed to taking them in myself, as I'm sure people can learn or resonate with who's listening. Thanks very much for saying that, because whether you know it, it's always good to hear it again.
Yeah.
And as I was saying, we change and evolve and sometimes you forget. It means a lot to hear back. I was sitting down, don't drag it on too much, but I was sitting down with the coach a few years ago and he said, it'd be really worthwhile, asking three people, what's the natural strength that you bring that they really admire? And just ask a few people and see what it is and ask for a couple of things from them. So I think I asked eight people, and the theme that came back from almost every single person was, you have a presence that makes it okay to be me.
Yeah.
Wow. What a compliment.
Yeah.
But I'd never seen it.
Mm.
I didn't really know. I knew that I loved hearing people's stories, and almost like we've all got a heart, but all our hearts kind of beat differently. I mean that in a kind of metaphorical sense. But just even for people listening to hear, like, what would people say about you? Do you know? And how can you find out? Because we all have like this. It's my belief anyway, that we're not here just to suffer and to just get through life. Like, we're not. I think as a culture we're in survival mode potentially at the moment. In fact, I think Irish people, we like survival mode. I think we're actually drawn to it. Yeah, as a Mayo man, I know all about it. Yeah.
But it's funny because people don't always, like, I 1,000,000% see that in you, and from what Patricia just said there, she sees that in you as well. So it's funny that it's, now I know it's something that you're probably aware of from people saying it to you, and even though it's nice to hear it again, but it's funny that people might not know what you think is very obvious in a strength of theirs. And I do just want to say, because I don't know, was it exactly that you were talking about before, or was it something different that you were talking about? But I remember you used the words, when asking someone about the strengths that you have, what would be missing in the room if you weren't there? And it resonated so much with me. So I just want to say those words in case it sinks in with someone else, because I think it's just such a powerful way of looking at it.
Yeah, I love that question.
Yeah, it's a brilliant question.
Because it's the one experience you'll never have.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never know what the room is like when you're not there. But something's in the room when you're there, and something's not in the room when you're not there. Yeah. Thanks very much for a very...
Yeah, thank you so much.
It feels
much.
Like
it's
a
amazing.
Very collaborative conversation, which I like.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it too. The whole morning, from the minute I met you, it's just been... And we're not finished yet.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. Really. Happy and happy that you're here. Like, genuinely happy that you're physically with us on and doing this. And it's pretty good.
I'm delighted to be. Some people would say, why would you travel down for a podcast? But for me, it's not about the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, to everyone listening, it's about the podcast. But
it's the amazing podcast. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. There's a bigger picture. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Thomas.
You're welcome.
Pleasure. That was fantastic.